As Paul mentioned, this is my 15th year here in Hong Kong. It's always surprising. Every time I come back, I have gotten used to the places I go and the things that I see. And so now it's almost like a second home. We've been at the same apartment all these years as well, so everything becomes very familiar. But it's also nice to see many familiar faces as well. Hopefully you had good experiences. It's been long enough for some of you that you can forget, you can just remember the good things. This topic has a very long title, so that could be good or bad. The long title is really meant to just try to say that this is about trying to take models and people and put them together. It's just that I'm working on a particular application problem. The application I'm looking at is in setting prices, setting optimal prices. So what I'd like to do is just talk a little about the goals. So this is actually a very long-standing research project. Many years ago, when I was doing my work in graduate school, one of the first problems that I was looking at was optimizing prices. So that means that we collected all kinds of data about sales, and the goal is to try to infer how people were behaving to predict what would be the right price, what's the optimal price. So this was when we had statistical modeling and econometrics, and in the intervening years, we have this growth in data science and machine learning. So what I'd like to do is to bring some of those ideas back in. And to me, this is really important because it's trying to figure out how do you do data science when you may have very limited amounts of data. So let me just pose the problem. It's actually pretty simple. You're a marketer, and one of the marketing levers that you can pull is changing prices. So what's the right price to charge? You can experiment, or you can use intuition and experience. So oftentimes, managers will rely on both. Sometimes they do this well. Other times, it's ad hoc. What they often try to do is encode their wisdom or their intuition in what's known as business rules. So business rules are a set of could be if-then rules that are encoded to make sure that you come up with reasonable prices. The point that I will make, for those that work in this area of Bayesian statistics, it will be very familiar, is that these constraints, these business rules, reflect prior information that you know before you even look at the data. So the point that I'm going to make is that to properly weight these things, you want to bring them in at the beginning of the problem, not wait until the end of the problem, then merge them together. So this research is going to show you how you can use these Bayesian methods to integrate the prior information with the data that we have. Okay, so to get us started, I will show you an example of a problem. It's not the data set that I'm going to be looking at, but the goal is for you to see why this could be an interesting problem. This is a page of Amazon sales for the book Making of a Fly, The Genetics of Animal Design. If you look closely, what you'll see is that a copy of the book goes for $1.7 million. That's U.S. dollars, right? So the question is, what is the value of this book? Do you think that they've got the price right? Well, when was the last time you paid $1 million for a book? This is not a rare edition. This is simply a textbook. If you go back and take a look at the textbook, it's about genetics, the study of genetics applied to the fly, thinking about how it grows from one cell to a complex organism. It's not even a really popular book, but it's selling for $1.7 million. You can also buy it for $2.198 million, And that's even not the lowest price. If you came back a week later, the price went up to $23 million. The funny thing is, if you look closely, they still charge you $3.99 for shipping. You would think that after you've paid $20 million for a book, that they would come and hand deliver it to you. Okay, so what do you think? Does this seem like a reasonable price to you or not? Okay, so you've used your intuition and your insight, and you know this is a ridiculous price. So why is this price set the way that it is? Well, there's just an automatic rule that's being used to set prices. In this case, one of the merchants has decided that they're going to be 99% of the price of the other merchant. And the other merchant has decided that they're going to be about 20%, 10% over the price of the first merchant. So they take the minimum price and the maximum price. Well, that seems reasonable, but if the prices are updated dynamically, and if these things are dynamically updated every minute or every hour, you can see what's going to happen. The prices just keep ballooning up until eventually you hit $20 million. Okay, now clearly no one is going to buy the book at this price, but you're never going to collect any data either. So the only way that you're really going to figure this out, that this is an awful price, is through insight and some intuition about what's reasonable and what's not reasonable.
Was it real? Yeah. Something you really captured?
Yeah, this is a real book. So if you want, I'm sure the bookstore would be willing to take $23 million for the book. Subsequently, the price has come back down to, I think it's probably about $30. It's really not that expensive a book. It's really not that popular of a book. But this is an example of where computers come and drive to potentially silly results.
Alan, unlike you, I don't have 20 million.
Nor do I have 20 million. Certainly not to spend on the making of The Fly. But silly things come up in other instances as well. This is an example of a grocery store, in this case Whole Foods, which is an organic grocery store that was recently purchased by Amazon in the U.S. I don't know if you can see it well, but this is asparagus water. So you take a bottle of water, you put three strands of asparagus in, and they sell it for a price of $5.99. Okay, now again, if you think about this, how much does a bottle of water cost? Maybe a dollar. How much do three asparagus cost? Maybe. So at most, you would think that you could put these two things together at a cost of $2. So here they're tripling the price. Now, again, you can argue, well, no, there's a market and there could be all kinds of infused flavored drinks and this could be a good idea. And there's just a lot of price insensitive people out there. But I'd actually use this as another example of a silly product idea and a silly price to charge it at. I can tell you that this is not going to be a big seller. I can tell you a priori from my experience that the price is set way too high for this particular product. Okay, so where does that leave us? Well, what I'm driving at is that you can look at a couple examples and you can see that these are just extreme, unusual, silly results. Unfortunately, data science doesn't necessarily have this appreciation for what's reasonable and what's silly in the same way that people can. So there are a few options for us, and underlying this research is this question of how do I combine people, humans, managers, expert opinion. To me, I'll think about these synonymously with a computer. Again, in this case, the computer, the statistical model, the machine learning algorithm, again, I'll also use interchangeably. So it's basically how do you bring computers and people together? So this is a very common problem, not unique to me or my research. The unique thing here is we're just thinking about a very particular type of problem that we want to solve. Now, one option is that we only use the data. So this seems very objective, right? So that could be a good thing. That sounds scientific. That all I'm going to do is I'm going to go back, look at data, and I am going to be a scientist and only use the data and not allow my opinions to have any influence on what the solution is going to be. So again, that might seem like a reasonable thing, but the problem in the last two examples is it's quite likely you won't sell anything. So you will have data with zero sales and a ridiculous price, and you're really not going to learn anything from the data. Well, another idea is that you could just use the managerial insight. So I know that $20 million is a ridiculous price for the book. I know that somewhere in the range of $10 to $100 is the reasonable range. So I could just restrict it. The problem there is that that's very subjective. And now all of a sudden, I don't have any data. I only have the insight. The good thing, though, is that it's explainable, at least to the manager that made that decision. Another idea is that just use the data unless the data gives you a ridiculous answer, in which case then you'll use the managerial insight. And what's a ridiculous answer is you ask the manager up front and say, what are the reasonable range of prices that you can set? So this sounds better, but the problem is that the information is all or nothing. I take all the information that comes from the manager, or I discard it entirely. If I discard it, then I just use data. I can also flip it around. So I'll use the managerial insight unless it conflicts with the data. So maybe the data gives me a range of what's reasonable. The last, which is really the idea that I'm going to propose, is to combine both of these things together. So how do we combine the information together appropriately? Well, that's the trick. So the trick is to try to figure out how do we weight data and how do we weight opinion properly. So what I'm going to do is talk about price optimization. Then I'm going to talk a little about business rules as prior information. Then I'll give you the specific example that I'm going to come up with for creating informative priors from business rules, and then I'll end with an example. All right, so what's happened over the last 20 years is that there's been a huge growth in this area of quantitative marketing. That means that marketers collect all kinds of data. They collect data about sales and purchases, they collect competitive information, they collect clicks of what people are looking at, where the attention is. So this is fitting into that stream of quantitative marketing. Here's just a simple example of what one data set in my study looks like. The data that I'm going to show you comes from a supermarket in the Chicago market. And what you're looking at is price and sales. So over here, the price of a carton of orange juice in this case goes somewhere between about $1.50 and $3. So each one of these circles represents a combination of price and movement. Movement is the number of units sold in that week for this particular store. So here you can see that the price was set at $1.99. One week they sold 500 cartons, another week they sold 750 cartons, and another week they sold 50 cartons. So again, there's a lot of variability or noise that's in the data. Down here, when the price is set at a higher level, if it's at $2.99, what I notice is that the prices, the quantity is going to be much more constrained. It looks like somewhere between 50 and a couple hundred units. So clearly, I say that there's an influence of price on sales. If I go back and do a regression model, it's quite likely that I'll come out with a log-log regression model. If I take the log of movement, I can explain it as a function of the log of price. We're interested in trying to come up with optimal prices. So if I take sales, the number of units I sell, multiply it times the margin of each of the products, I come up with a graph that I would predict that looks like this. So this tells me what the profitability of the orange juice is at any given price. So this is a prediction that I'm making. Notice that if I charge $5, I think I'll make about $40 a week for this particular store, which doesn't sound like a lot, but if you multiply it times 30,000 products in a few hundred stores, all of a sudden you're talking about quite a bit of money. And again, if I can make a 10% gain in one product or do it across the board, this could have a substantial impact in the overall profitability. The best price in this case would be somewhere around $350, right? So this suggests that the optimal profit should be somewhere around $50, maybe even close to $60. And if I'm off a little, like if I'm down at $3 or if I'm down at $250, you can see that I could be substantially underpricing the product. I can go back and point out the formula. The formula is actually important when we come to the numeric example. The optimal price is a function of the cost, and then you have a markup. The markup in this case is the elasticity divided by the elasticity plus one. So the elasticity is just a measure of how sensitive people are to price changes. So in economics, this is a really important fundamental measure of price sensitivity. So if my price sensitivity is minus 3, that means that my optimal markup should be minus 3 divided by minus 3 plus 1, or that's minus 3 divided by minus 2, so that's 1.5, or I'm 50% over a cost. If my elasticity is very large, so in this case, if my elasticity is minus 5, then my optimal markup is going to be 25% over a cost. I'm sorry, 20% over cost. So again, there are this formula could be used as long as I know what the cost and the elasticity are, I can figure out what the optimal price should be. Now, the reason that I'm pointing this out, and it's really important in this talk, is that if I tell you what the optimal price is, then I'm really giving you a statement about what I think the elasticity is. No one thinks in terms of elasticities. Managers have this intuition about this is a reasonable price to charge or this is an unreasonable price to charge. But they don't think in terms of models. The statisticians, the data scientists, the machine learners, they think in terms of algorithms. They don't have this intuition about what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. Let's make the problem a little more complicated. Instead of looking at the price quantity for one product, what I know is that the sales of the same product is going to be influenced by the price of all the other products that are out there. So if I'm thinking about how much Minute Maid is going to sell, that's a function of how much Tropicana Premium 64 ounce or Tropicana Premium 96 or Tropicana 64 ounce or Minute Maid 64 ounce is going to sell. So again, I see all kinds of relationships. As my price goes up, my sales go down. As my competitors' prices go up, what I notice is that my sales go up. So again, this is the own price effect, and these others are just illustrating substitution between one product for other products. Okay. After a little calculus and rearranging, I can also come up with another rule that says that I'm interested in optimizing not the price of the profits of one product, but of all the products that are in the category. So if I sum up all the products in the category, I can come up with another rule. And again, this rule says that the optimal price is a function of the elasticity for my product divided by the elasticity of my product plus one, which is the same thing we had before. And then there's another term over here. This other term is trying to say, let's take a weighted average of the substitution effect from all the other products that are out there in the category. And then I've got cost. Again, the output is optimal price. The input is these elasticities. I don't know the elasticities, and that's what these models are out there trying to collect. This math has found widespread use in practice. If you look over the last 10 or 15 years, what you see is that there are a huge number of companies that are out there, Demandtech and KSS Retail, Oracle, Pros, Chimetrics, Vendavo, Vistar, Zillion. Again, the list goes on. The idea is that we collect data, we use that data to optimally set prices. So it's very popular, and these techniques have found widespread impact. Why? Because they improve the profitability. Not by a lot, by about 2-4% in terms of revenue. But you've got to remember that a lot of these retailers have very small margins. They might be only making 1-2%. So if I can increase revenue by 2-4%, this could have an increase in overall profit margins by like 25%. So this is huge. And what you find is that retailers should benefit from deploying these customer analytics. In fact, studies show that retailers should benefit more than any other industries out there, more than media, entertainment, insurance, hospitality, banking. Okay, so traditionally, the way that we go about solving this problem is we collect data, we estimate a demand model, that gives us these elasticities. Then we have an optimization problem where we try to maximize the profitability given these elasticities that we've estimated. Then at the end, if we come back and we have silly recommendations, we make some adjustments. All right, so where is the data? Well, the data is at the start. That looks like a good core data science technique. The manager is down here at the end of the process, and he's looking at the output of the models and saying, yeah, that looks okay, or no, that's bad. So I've got to go back, and I've got to adjust the recommendations. So typically, it's at this stage over here that really silly prices would get caught. So if I was at Amazon, I would know that $23 million is a pretty ridiculous price to sell a book at. So there's some constraint, and I would say, look, only in this range is it going to be reasonable. All right, so what I'm going to suggest is that this is a bad way of trying to solve this problem. What we need to do is take the managerial information, and we need to combine it with the data right up front, and that's what's going to push us to a better solution. Okay, so let's think about business rules as prior information. So the argument that I'm making goes back to what's the optimal price. It's a function of the elasticity, which tells me how sensitive people are to price changes, and cost. If I take those two pieces of information, put them together, I can just, by a rule, tell you what is the right price to charge. There are a lot of ad hoc rules that get applied at the end of this problem. Most of the rules seem quite reasonable. Like one rule that I see in supermarket retailers is that the gap between the national brands and the private labels, the store brands, has to be more than 25%. Or the price of all the products within a family. So if I'm thinking about strawberry yogurt versus vanilla yogurt versus mango yogurt, they all get priced at the same level. So again, these are the kinds of rules that managers come up with. And oftentimes, they're used at the end of the process of going through and saying, okay, let's make some adjustments to these prices. So why do we use business rules? Well, the answer is quite simple, which is that if we didn't use them, we would come up with a lot of really silly recommendations. That $23 million for that book is pretty funny, but imagine walking into a parking shop and seeing that a carton of orange juice is going to cost you $5,000 today, or I don't know what a watermelon is going to set you back $300,000, right? Those would be silly, and you would walk out of that store thinking that they're crazy. I'm never going to go back there because I have no idea what they're doing. So the reason is that you want to try to make things better. And again, there are lots of examples I can go through. This is an interesting example from Demandtech, which again is one of the leaders in this field. Demandtech relies so heavily on the rules that they actually came out with a patent that organizes the rules and how they're going to be applied. In a typical application, you'll end up with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of these rules. In fact, the rules themselves start becoming massive. They conflict with one another. And all of a sudden, the rules themselves are driving what the prices that you're going to charge. I can also come up with lots of examples of academics that do the same thing. So the essence of the argument that I'm going to make is that the business rules and the constraints that they're imposing on the pricing solution are really popular. They make a lot of sense, but we're using them in the wrong way. Instead of looking at the end of the problem, we need to be using them at the beginning of the problem because they're basically telling us something about how we think people are behaving. What's a reasonable solution? What's not a reasonable solution? More generally, what I'm saying is that you don't go through, do your machine learning algorithm, and then at the end say, that doesn't look so good. I'm not going to use your machine learning model. What you need to do is you need to figure out what's the information that you have, interject at the beginning of the problem, and try to do all these things simultaneously. All right, so again, what I'm saying is that these statements on these optimal prices implicitly are telling you something about what you think the optimal price should be or what the elasticity is. So if I tell you that the markup should be 25%, then that tells me that I think that the elasticity is minus 5. So again, I can work back and forth between these things, and that's what the core of the argument that I'm making today. So what we need to do is we need to use these business rules, not after the fact to constrain the pricing solutions, but we need to bring them up front. So in other words, if I'm trying to think about how do I integrate manager and model together, I don't have the model work independently and then at the end bring the manager in. I have to get them working both up front to discern what's their knowledge, and then I have to weight them and integrate them appropriately. Otherwise, what happens is that you just use one and not the other, and that's a very inefficient way of trying to use it. Okay, so this is what my modeling process looks like. I start out with the demand model, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to incorporate the prior information from the business rules over here. I'm then going to maximize, but in this case, I don't have to worry about imposing any constraints on the problem because all the information has been reflected over here. So that's it. That's the essence of what I'm trying to say. So the next part is just to try to show you an example of how this works and practically what the implication is going to be. Okay, so this is actually a simple equation, but for those that aren't into math, let me just walk you through what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's a relationship between quantity and price. There's some mathematical relationship. They have some parameters, and those parameters are actually very important to us because they capture what's the sensitivity of people as I change prices. So the optimal price is a function of these parameters. And in this case, I'm just going to come up with a really simple business rule that says that the optimal price should go between some lower bound and some upper bound. I could then use some statistics, and this is the core of the methodology that I'm talking about. In the univariate case, it works out nicely. In the multivariate case, it's hard. But what I can do is I can invert back and forth between the elasticity space and the price space. And as I go back and forth, if I have a prior guess about what the elasticities should look like, those tell me a distribution about what the optimal price should look like. Or vice versa, if I have an idea of what the optimal prices are, those tell me a guess of what I think the elasticity should be. So I can go back and forth between these two things. So over here, what is going to end up happening is that in my approach, I'm going to put everything together and I'm going to estimate my model jointly using both the managerial insight that comes from these business rules as well as the data. That's going to optimize price. The traditional approach is different. It says, let's do the model and let's not worry about what the manager's doing. Then at the end, if the model gives a reasonable prediction, let's use it. If it doesn't give a reasonable prediction, then let's toss it and let's just use what the manager says. So if the manager says the range in prices, not 23 million, but the range in prices is between $30 and $100, then we just choose the upper end, $100. That's bad because that gives us very extreme results, and that's really not what the manager was trying to do. The manager's trying to say, look, let's choose a reasonable range. I didn't really mean that 100 was the right point to choose. I meant there's somewhere in that range of 30 to 100 that seems reasonable. Okay, so here's a picture just to try to show you what the best guess would be under these different approaches. The traditional approach says that the elasticity could be anywhere between minus 6 and 0. If I have an elasticity of 0, that means that I should charge an infinite price. So it's even worse than 23 million. It should be 23 billion, or it should be the entire stock of money supply. So that's clearly ridiculous. But what I'm proposing is let's go back, put the constraint in, and what it's saying is that, look, we know that at most the elasticity is going to be minus 2, or that corresponds with a statement that the price should be somewhere in the range of cost to 100% over cost. It shouldn't be more than double. So what it does is it lops off all this area that's silly, and it just leaves us with the part that we think is reasonable. So instead of hoping that we come out with a reasonable guess at the end, what it's doing is it's going to give us a reasonable guess as we work through this problem throughout. So here's another way of looking at the same thing. This is what the distribution of prices looks like, or this is what I think my recommendation of optimal price is going to be. So in the traditional, it says, look, it could be somewhere around $1.30, but there's a really good chance that it should be at the extreme, in this case, at $2 or 200% over cost. And what my method is doing is saying, no. It really should be somewhere around $1.30. There's a very small possibility that should be as high as $2. So in other words, it tends to give you much better predictions and answers. Again, I can show you more. This is just the comparison. So this is actually a very weak statement about elasticities. So all I'm saying is that the optimal price should be less than 2. And if I go back and compare the guesses that I have on how people are going to respond to these price changes, so again, the elasticity says that if I increase the price by 10%, I think I'm going to decrease the number of units they sell by about 30%. My adjusted approach, instead of going back and saying it'll drop by 30%, says it'll drop by 33%. So again, not a huge difference, but it's enough to have an impact on what the optimal price is going to be. If I come up with an even stronger statement about what the elasticities are going to be, so in this case, instead of saying that I think beforehand the optimal price should be between 0 and 100% over a cost, in this case, I'm saying that it should be between 0 and 50% over a cost. Now, my traditional method gives me elasticity of minus 3, and my optimal price would be $1.50, but in my approach, I come up with an optimal price that's $1.40. So again, the traditional approach tends to be all or nothing. In this case, it says we should be higher than $1.50, so what it does is it just constrains it to be $1.50, whereas the approach I'm following says, no, let's bring it back and let's make it a little more reasonable. Here's an bigger, more fun example. This is trying to get you acclimated to the idea that there are a lot of rules that we put together. I think any one of these rules should be pretty simple and easy. So what you notice frequently is that people pay attention to 9-cent endings. So what's the difference between 99 cents and $1? Well, it's only a penny. If I round, it's not a big difference, but we believe that people pay attention to things going from left to right, So as a consequence, when I don't see the one digit, I think that 99 cents is substantially less than $1. So most retailers believe that they should price on 9-cent endings. And again, I'm not debating whether that's true or not. I do have data. But my initial guess is that there is one rule, in this case the green one, that says that prices should end on 9-cent endings. So these are the guesses that I would give you. I don't know if it should be $2.59 or $3.59 or $4.59. Should be one of those. Another rule is that I think the price should be somewhere between $3 and $5. And then another rule is that I think that the best price should be somewhere around $3.15. So that's this red line over here. And if I put them all together, it gives me this black line. And this gives me what my best guess is without having any data about what the optimal price should be. Okay. So what is the implication? Well, let's suppose that I estimate a model, and my model tells me that the elasticity should be somewhere between -3 and -2. My prior that I just showed you is this green line over here. This is on the price elasticity. So remember, I've inverted my best guess about what the optimal price is to try to figure out what does that imply about the relationship between price and quantity. So that's this green line. The model is going to combine this green line and this blue line together, and that gives me what's called the posterior, or represents how I combine my model, my manager together. So this Bayesian approach is very powerful in trying to link the two. So what's the consequence of this? Well, again, the optimal prices can look really different. So over here, the optimal price that I would come up with might be $4.50. According to my model, it's somewhere around $4. My initial guess should be $3.50. So I'm definitely learning, and I come much closer back to what the truth is than if I followed just the manager by himself or just the data by itself. So if I put them together, I do a lot better. Okay, so what I'm telling you is that the traditional approach to trying to combine managers and models is all or nothing. And I often see this in practice with data scientists. So you come back, you estimate a model, and the manager is trying to figure out, does this model make any sense or not? And what he does is he looks at some of the implications or the recommendations that you get from the model. And if the recommendations look silly, he says, go back, it's a bad model, start again. So there's no combination. It's either it's okay or it's not okay. And what this approach is saying is that, no, everything's uncertain. And you just have to take all of it, blend them together. And that blending process is what's going to give us our learning that we can come up with. So the bottom line for the example is that this actually really matters. You can come up with substantial and practical differences across the examples. Okay, so I've got about 5 minutes, so let me just go through one last example, and then I'll open it up for some questions. So here's a bigger, more complex system. So instead of thinking about one product, what if I have a score of products in a category? So I can extend the model out. I can even relax this. I have another version where I think about a Gaussian process, which is a non-parametric model to understand the relationships between the inputs and the outputs. The inputs in this case are prices and features and promotional effects. The output is going to be sales, which allows me to predict what profits are going to be. So I'm going to go back and figure out a way to invert between these statements about price margins and elasticities. And I also have to add my business rules in. So in this case, my business rules are going to be things like the optimal prices should be within 20% of current prices. So again, this is a really common belief that managers think that they're not dumb. They're not at a bad place. They're at a reasonable place right now. most machine learning models, most statistical models won't incorporate that kind of information. So all they're going to do is take a look at the data, come up with a recommendation, and they don't think about where we're at right now and how far is reasonable to move. The other thing that I'm going to do is I'm also going to enforce these price quality tiers. So I'm going to say that there are high quality national brands that should be priced more than the store brands. So again, it doesn't really look like there's a lot of information here, but it turns out that there is, and there's enough information that when you combine it with the data, it can substantially alter what your best guess is about the elasticity estimates. So again, these are price coefficients, or these are estimates that tell you what the relationship is between a price change and a quantity change. So one line over here shows me the constrained, and the other shows me the unconstrained. So the unconstrained is just the pure data. The constrained is where I go back and I incorporate the information. If I go back and compare the optimal prices in each of these cases, in this case, I'm going to show you what the percentage change is from the traditional method versus my method. And what you see is that I think that if you follow the traditional method, you'd be pricing too high. So consistently, I go back and I'm recommending a lower price than if you just used a model. In my experience, that happens all the time, that the model wants to try to push things beyond where they're at right now, and managers don't like that. So oftentimes, managers will just go back ad hoc and say, no, let's make some kind of adjustment. And again, it's not just marketers that do this. I work with a bank. At the bank, they have to make predictions about what the default is going to be of their customers. So they have to make sure that they have enough reserves set aside that if their customers start defaulting, that the bank is not going to default itself. So they have to set reserves. So they come back, they build these models, they make predictions about what the reserves should be. They pass it to the board of So they go back and they talk to the chairman of the board who sits with the other board members, and they go back and make a decision about what should our reserves be. And lo and behold, typically what they do is they say, we don't really want to have as much reserves. Let's kick them down a little. Let's knock them down by 10%. So how do they do that? Well, their argument is we've got experience, and our experience shows up in some way, and this is the way that we're going to do it. So you just arbitrarily change the recommendations from the model. So again, what I'm saying is that the right way to do it is that if they had this insight, they should have told them what the insight was up front and then combined it appropriately with the data. That's the way that you efficiently try to solve these problems. So again, what's happening right now is that people are too ad hoc in the way that they use data science for making decisions. Oftentimes, it's an all or nothing. It's like, okay, I'll just use the model, or no, the model's no good. I'm just going to go with my intuition. So what I'm trying to tell you is that whenever you have these models, they could be rearranged, that you can take the information that you have, and again, the information you have doesn't look anything like the model, but you can take those insights that you have and put them up front and change the way that the model is learning or the way that it weights the information. So again, ultimately, this is all about trying to efficiently combine experts and combine data together. All right, so that's where I'll end up, and I'll throw it back to you to see what questions that you have for me.